Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. A Netflix original documentary. The view moves across rows of empty seats in a stadium. As the view changes to a deserted baseball diamond, voiceover.
All of life is what if. I don't know that any of us can identify what that critical role is that we bring to the lives that we share in common.
Now in a courtroom, the defendant, a man with dark hair and a mustache, appears before a judge.
Right, in the case of People versus Juan Ignacio Catalan, is that your true name?
Yes, ma'am.
Voiceover, Juan.
Let's see. Well, I was born in Los Angeles in 1978.
The back of his head as he stands in the empty baseball stadium.
My dad bought a house in a suburb of 15, 20 miles north of LA.
Childhood photos of Juan and his brother.
My brother, Mario, started hanging around with the wrong crowd. I always looked up to him because he was my big brother. And I just remember seeing him coming home with like stereos and all types of different car parts. And that, I guess, intrigued me. They used to break into the cars and I would be the driver. That was the first time I ever got arrested.
Interview, Juan.
I definitely wanted to make that trip my last trip ever to jail.
Blurred, fast-moving video of stadium seats, then the title, Long Shot. Aerial view of a residential neighborhood. Interview, Juan.
Well, it was August 12th of 2003. Me and Alma, we had like broken up. We were having some problems. I called her up and I asked her that if she could come and sleep over my house.
Juan's girlfriend, Alma.
And he asked me, what are you doing? I said, trying to go to sleep.
She didn't want to, but you know, I'm a very persistent guy.
Distorted images of a baseball game.
That night, I had a weird dream. I had a dream of like UFOs or aliens or something, and that I was being taken away. I kid you not.
Now a machine shop. An older man works at one of the machines.
Woke up any other day, and we're driving to work. It's probably about 7:30 in the morning. We pull into our shop parking lot, and my dad was there, of course. He was always first one there, 5-6 in the morning.
Alma.
We pulled in to the parking lot. I noticed a truck kind of close to us. And that's when it all happened.
While Juan tells the story, close-up images of machinery.
As soon as I open the door, he jumps out of the car and he's just like... Only thought I had was I was dead. I was completely surrounded within 30 seconds. They walked up to me, threw me on the floor, like face down, on the asphalt. My dad opens the door, and I remember he poked his head out the door. And I just remember looking at my dad, and he's like, he looked at me, and I go, Dad, look. I go, Dad, look, look. I said, Dad.
Juan becomes emotional. While he composes himself, audio of a police interrogation.
I'm Detective Rodriguez, reporting Detective Pinner. Okay?
What's going on? What I want to know.
We're hoping that you're going to talk to us. Is that what you're willing to do? You're willing to talk to us about what's going on?
What's going on?
Alma.
Next, you know, one of the detectives showed up to the house.
Video of Detective Rodriguez.
State your full name for the record, sir.
Juan Rodriguez.
He says, well, he's like... He was arrested. I said, I get that. Why was he arrested? And he's like, because the murder of Martha Puebla. And I said, excuse me?
Juan.
And I think that I was speechless for like 5 minutes.
Footage from Inside Edition.
Juan was in jail, charged with the May 12th, 2003 murder of 16-year-old Martha Puebla. The young woman had testified in a separate case in which Juan's brother was a co-defendant.
Everyone makes mistakes. It's just some people make bigger mistakes than others. and they're not easily undone. My brother had been arrested for a murder, and we went to his preliminary hearing.
When we were in court, they did ask us to provide our driver's license or IDs. One thing I remember very clearly is Martha Puebla was a witness.
They wanted her to point out the shooter in court, but she never said anything. She goes, I didn't see anything. And I never thought anything of it. I took it as we're watching someone testify.
Video of Detective Pinner.
You solemnly state that the evidence that you shall present in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Audio interrogation.
You guys are gonna take away my life for this fucking bullshit?
What bullshit is this? You killed somebody.
Wait a minute. Those are very strong words right there. I did not kill nobody. I would never kill nobody. And I never do anything to hurt anybody.
Convince us otherwise.
An outside view of the Los Angeles County Sheriff Men's Central Jail. One.
I remembered my cousin. He would always brag about this kick-ass lawyer that he was a filing clerk for.
Footage from hard copy.
Las Vegas. It's a great place to go and have fun. But we went there to uncover some of the sneaks, cheaters, and sore losers. And they were all caught on.
Defense attorney Todd Melnick.
When I first met Juan, I was in a criminal defense practice, as I had been for probably 10 years. Naturally, I asked him about the facts of the case. I got this story that I wasn't expecting.
Courtroom.
What time did the 911 call go out with respect to this murder on May 12th?
Detective Pinner.
22:43. That's 10:43 p.m.
Todd.
I didn't even know what the evidence was. I didn't know how many witnesses they claimed they had. I didn't know anything.
At the time that the defendant was arrested, did he have any facial hair?
Yes.
And what type of facial hair did he have?
He had a mustache and he was slightly unshaven with a small piece of hair below his bottom lip.
They showed me the sketch and said that was me.
Audio interrogation.
Male Hispanic, black hair, very short, 5'7 to 5'11, 19 to 25 years old, stocky build, medium mustache, with slight
like hair below his lip. I've never had nothing under my lip.
Well, what's under there right now?
Well, I haven't shaved.
Okay, so that you didn't shave this day either.
But why wouldn't I shave my mustache then?
I don't know, because you think you're cool. Because you think there were no witnesses. But there were witnesses.
Todd.
I asked him, was the death penalty mentioned? Yes, death penalty was mentioned.
One.
They had a paper with my picture on it. And they're like, yeah, this is him. That's all they would say. This is him.
Audio.
Please, you guys can't do this to me, dude. I swear to God, man. I'm like two daughters that I love so much, man. I did not do this.
People identified you, the composite is you.
You see the pictures, don't lie.
Todd.
I mean, I just had a gut feeling. There's just no way this kid could have committed a murder. I mean, it just seemed completely out of his character. And so I told him, I'm gonna get you out of here.
Rays of sunlight shine down through clouds over Los Angeles. Video of Detective Pinner.
Well, did you investigate Juan Catalan in any way, shape, or form before you had him arrested on August 12th?
Yes.
What did you do?
I wanted the chronological log that the detectives are supposed to follow every time they do something on the case.
You showed his picture to the witness.
And?
Verified that he had a apparent motive.
Todd.
Then I started to ask him, all right, do you remember where you were?
A four-piece a cappella group sings at a baseball game. Alma.
May 12th, I said, that's around Mother's Day. I'm like, you know what? Juan, you were at a Dodger game.
He had bought some tickets for his mom to go to the Dodger game, knowing full well she probably wouldn't go.
Yeah, I did. I got those tickets, you know, trying to pull them off as a Mother's Day gift.
Gosh, if we can just prove you're at the game, get the case thrown out. Easy.
Video of the game.
Not so easy.
Aerial view of Dodger Stadium at night. One.
First of all, I wasn't supposed to be at that game.
Video of the game.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are pleased to welcome more than 2,000 City of El Segundo employees, families, and friends to tonight's game.
I didn't know who to take because it was such short notice. So I thought of my daughter, of course. You know, she was six. You know, she doesn't get into the games, but just her being there, you know, she gets excited. I took my cousin Miguel, who's also a sports fan, and a good friend of mine, Ruben. Didn't think much of it, just another Dodger game.
The victim's house, Todd.
According to the eyewitnesses and the police reports, Martha Puebla was at her residence. She had come outside to talk to a couple of other young adults right around 10 o'clock at night.
Video of the game.
We have the paid attendance tonight, 27,458.
They were going back and forth.
During the time that these four or five people were just outside of Martha's house, they saw a Chevy Malibu drive slowly around the block several times.
One.
It was a tide going into the ninth inning, and I'm like, we're not going nowhere.
The game.
Eric Gagne comes in, and he would go into Mike Kincaid's spot.
Todd.
The person that was driving the car came out of the car and came up to Martha.
The game, then Juan.
You know, he came in and I was like, oh, we got this. You know, he's going to nail this ninth inning. We're going to come up and, you know, hit the game-winning hit.
Marcus Giles with runners in
the game, then Todd.
Hitting 355.
Martha says, hey, it's Martha. You remember me. And the shooter said something to the effect of, no, you don't. Pulls a gun out of his sweatshirt and then shoots Martha in the head.
Ground ball at the middle.
The game, interspersed with photos from the murder scene.
Come in for call scores. Giles scores, and the game has come apart on Eric Gagne.
One.
Oh, man, they rocked them for like seven runs. A 4-4 tie became an 11-4 game, and I'm like, oh, dude, it's over. Let's get out of here.
Todd.
Having just witnessed an execution-style murder, the main and only eyewitness in this case dropped his cell phone and ran as fast as he could.
One.
Grabbed my daughter's hand, and we're walking towards the exit. I see a stand of baseball cards, so I had to stop. I had to stop.
Todd.
Police talk to the owner of the cell phone. He looks at tons and tons of photos and eventually gives a sketch of what he thinks the person looks like that killed Martha.
One.
We opened up the packs and that was it. That was the night. Nothing else.
Deputy District Attorney Beth Silverman.
First of all, we had an eyewitness who identified him and cooperated with a composite artist within days of the homicide and came up with a composite that was strikingly similar to the defendant in appearance.
Todd.
The prosecutor they assigned to the case had never lost a murder case ever before in her career.
She was murdered because she did testify. And the day that she testified, which was May 1st of 2003, Juan Catalan was present in the audience during his brother's preliminary hearing when this girl testified.
Her nickname was Sniper because she likes to pick off people with the death penalty.
Do you think that Juan Catalan has any kind of a...
Interview, Beth.
...legitimate alibi at all?
No.
Aerial view of Dodger Stadium. Todd.
I asked Alma to find the tickets, but not to touch them.
Alma.
We turned the apartment upside down. Couldn't find the tickets. I couldn't find the tickets.
I'm going to show you three tickets here.
Courtroom.
Until finally I found a Dodger envelope.
Which of these tickets was the one that you possessed?
Todd.
The next thing that I did was I contacted Sam Fernandez.
Senior Vice President and General Counsel for the Dodgers.
Sam.
I don't really know what was going through my mind when I received that call. Well, here's another interesting day at the office, if you will. He came to the stadium and we walked down to the seats.
Todd.
I wanted to take photos of the seats where they were in relation to the Dodger dugout. I mean, I'm standing in Dodger Stadium.
Juan.
I was shackled up and put into a individual cage in the jail bus. I definitely felt that it had just become, that it just became real.
Alma.
I saw a county bus. I was coming home from work. And I just had this weird feeling inside of me. And I just broke down crying by myself in the car. Juan got his phone call later on that evening and calls me and tells me, I saw you on the freeway. I'm like, no way. He's like, I saw you on the freeway. He's like, I saw you. You were about to get the 5 to go home, and we kept going the opposite way. He's like, I wish I could have just jumped out of that window, go home with you.
Video of the game, Sam.
Really what he was looking for was some way of trying to identify the people who may have been sitting around his client who could actually testify that his client was there.
Todd.
They are season tickets that Juan got from somebody.
Sam.
Just because someone's a season ticket holder doesn't mean that they were at that game.
Todd.
So we tracked down people as far west as Hawaii and as far east as Chicago. Everybody we talked to, you know, I really didn't see them well enough that I would feel comfortable testifying.
Juan.
They transferred me to Supermax, which is maximum security, but like the hardest criminals there. You really don't know what fear is until you hear a grown man screaming for help.
Todd.
I also learned that there's another set of cameras called Dodger Vision.
Sam.
Dodger Vision is what you see on the big video screens at the stadium, our in-house filming.
I painstakingly went through the videos trying to find Juan among 40,000 people.
A staggering number, yes.
Since I knew where Juan was sitting, it was very easy to see the block of seats and count the rows down. Every time a right-handed batter came up to bat, I was looking for Juan or his friends in the background.
Juan.
I felt that I was getting framed. And then you hear these stories of people being exonerated 25, 30 years later. And that would play in my head over and over and over.
Todd.
I was putting everything on super slow-mo. Took me an entire day to go through a 3-hour game because I could not afford to miss anything.
Clips of the Dodger Vision video showing the game and the audience in the stands.
I was able to find Juan sitting in those seats.
Close-up of the video. Juan's face is blurry.
But the resolution wasn't high enough.
Juan.
Talking to the kids was really tough because they wanted to know when I was coming home. And I didn't have an answer.
Juan's daughter testifies.
Did I explain to you that we have to tell the truth in court? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
If I told you that this pen was blue, would that be the truth or a lie?
A lie.
And if I told you that this microphone was white, would that be the truth or a lie?
A lie.
You're going to promise to tell us the truth from what you remember?
Yeah.
Did you go to a Dodger game with your daddy this year, last year?
Yeah.
Did your daddy buy you anything during the game?
Yeah.
What did he buy you?
Ice cream and candy. And
Juan wipes tears from his eyes.
And some Dodgers cards.
Some Dodger cards? Where did he buy the Dodger cards? Do you remember?
Interview, Beth.
If Juan had the alibi of the Dodger game, why didn't he mention it when the police were interviewing him the night that he was arrested?
You'd have to ask him that.
What are you doing
tonight in the call? Audio, interrogation.
Well, I'm going to remember. Hopefully that's going to clear me up, dude.
Juan.
You know, these guys are telling me that I killed some 16-year-old girl. Like, the date was, like, was irrelevant to me at that point.
Todd.
I asked Juan some details about the game. Juan has a fantastic ability to recall games, plays, details. Because I think they may have been filming something there that day.
Juan.
Been to hundreds of Dodger games and never have I seen them film anything there. And, you know, this particular day, they were there.
All he remembered were security personnel blocking the aisle and this man walking up and down the stairs for the different takes.
Dodger Vision video of a bald man on the stairs.
So I went back to Dodger Stadium, walked with Sam to the media relations department. The person that was there pulled out this big calendar book. Watched her start flipping April, May, and like all these pages are blank. She turns to May 12th, and damn if there isn't an entry on May 12th. And it had some kind of obscure production company name. I didn't recognize it, but it had a phone number. I called it up, and they answer,
HBO.
Producer Tim Gibbons.
I got a call from a guy, this is Todd Melnick, I'm a lawyer, and he tells me this crazy story.
He says, well, we don't usually release any pre-production footage. You'll have to wait until it airs.
My first thought is, this guy's nuts. And secondly, there's 56,000 people at this game. How could this guy possibly be on camera?
I said, I need to find anything. I need to place my client at Dodger Stadium on that night.
Well, in the meantime, I talked to Larry, and I'm like, Larry, there's this guy that says, you know, his guy's in jail, and he's a lawyer, and they remember camera crews being there, and they think it's us.
Larry David.
What's that song? What is that song?
Tim.
Curb Enthusiasm was a comedy that was on HBO. It starred Larry David, the creator of Seinfeld.
Todd.
At the time, the name Larry David didn't ring a bell to me. I had no idea that he was this mega huge Hollywood star.
He's right, of course, in referring to me as a mega huge star. That's totally accurate about.
So he said, okay, when can you come down? I said, how about tomorrow? He says, okay, tomorrow.
Just hearing that,
one,
you know, he was going to go down there and see this, you know, these outtakes, you know, it just lifted my spirits instantly.
Tim.
This episode was called The Carpool Lane. It was the seventh episode of season four.
Scene from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Traffic. The only thing moving is the carpool lane. I'll never make it. I'm just going to go home.
The episode was that I picked up a hooker in the carpool lane and took her to Dodger Stadium.
Hey, Daddy. You want a date with Mama?
Actress Mama Kim Whitley.
I got a red snapper that'll talk to you, Daddy.
Get in the car.
Production assistant Robert Gedgick.
I'd never seen the show. I'd never heard of the show. I didn't have HBO, so I didn't have any exposure to the show. I was a runner. I was a PA. You know, go deliver this here. Go pick this up. Bring it back to the office sort of thing. So I had no clue what I was getting into.
Tim.
I knew that we were going to have to, you know, find a baseball stadium and fill it with thousands of extras. And, of course, he wanted to do the Dodgers since it's L.A. That right there was a huge uh-oh.
Sam.
We are part of the entertainment community in Los Angeles, and we do want to cooperate.
They came back and said, all right, here's what we could do. We showed up, I believe it was in the late afternoon, 4 or 5 o'clock was the call time.
Kim.
Now, I didn't understand that. I was like, how are we going to shoot at a real game? This is crazy.
I know the seats ain't way the fuck up here.
You got a problem with the
you
seats?
You said we had good seat club seats and shit.
Larry.
We shot in two sections. I don't know if they called a grandstand at Dodger Stadium, the upper deck. I don't know.
Tim.
It's very arbitrary where we were placed.
Kim.
I never saw the cameras at the Dodger game. I don't know if people even knew people were filming.
We had a very, very long lens. The whole thing was we needed to be almost invisible.
Larry.
I had to be in bad seats and then see Bob Einstein. He played Marty Funkhauser on the show.
Todd.
So I went to the Curb Your Enthusiasm studios in Santa Monica, and I get put into an editing bay. And they had an engineer that was putting in these beta tapes one by one and playing them for me.
Footage from the TV shoot. Robert.
I just remember it being chaos, to be honest with you. You've got two or three people trying to hold back thousands of people.
One.
Midway through the game, my daughter asked me for, I don't remember, ice cream or popcorn, candy, something.
Todd.
There was about eight tapes, and we're putting in tape after tape after tape.
We went up to the concession stands, and I bought her what she wanted.
Todd.
We start to roll the scenes, and, you know, there's some shots of Bob Einstein.
Hey, Larry, I see you got a ticket.
Yeah, the seats really stink, though.
One.
When I got back, there was a camera crew right on our aisle.
Tim.
We weren't supposed to stop people from walking up and down the aisle, but if they didn't want to be on camera, we would say, you know, can you wait 1 minute?
Can I join?
Scene from the show, then Juan.
I grabbed my daughter's hand, and I tried to walk down the stairs, but I was stopped.
You're not going to let me sit there?
Not even for a minute.
Robert.
These are paying customers. We can't hold them for too long of a duration.
Todd.
It's only about maybe 6 minutes of tape on each of these beta tapes. And we're already on tape number 5 or 6, and I'm getting disheartened.
One.
The same guy who stopped me, like, he looked over at me, and then he was just like, hey, you know what? Just go ahead. And nobody was being let in.
Thanks.
Robert.
I probably didn't even know that we were rolling the camera. And if I did, I was probably a shitty PA and let them through anyway.
Silent footage from the TV shoot. While Larry David is at the bottom of the stairs, Juan and his daughter head down the stairs, then turn and enter a row of seats. They take their seats, getting out of the way as Larry passes them on the stairs. When he reaches the top, Larry pauses and raises his arms, receiving some applause from the audience. The footage ends with a black screen. Todd.
I literally jumped out of my chair.
Literally Larry. Sprung out of his chair.
And there is this gasp.
And there he was. Pretty cool.
Robert is shown the footage.
Is that them right there? Wow.
Robert's face breaks into a smile. Todd.
We roll it back, confirm, yes, it is him. We keep playing the tape, and he's on two more cassettes. I thought, wow, this is fantastic. I'm going to be able to prove that he was at the game.
One.
I said, Todd, what happened? And he said, dude, you're on the tape. And I was just like, I think I let the phone go.
Todd.
And I asked him about, well, when was this shot? Do you guys know, like, what time of the game this was shot?
We shoot Tim with time code, which is time of day. The stamp that's put on the videotape that you can't see, it's electronic.
Todd.
So we knew exactly what time he was being shot at. The first scene was at 8:55. The last scene was at 9:15.
Larry.
Of course, it was really, it was pretty exciting, to tell you the truth.
Todd.
I looked at this video as being the holy grail of Juan's defense. Except the murder took place at like 10:32. Crap.
One.
What else do we need? You know, I'm on the video the day they're saying that I killed this girl. Like, isn't that enough?
Interview, Beth.
At 10:43 at night, our defendant, by his own evidence, his own witnesses, is on the same street as our victim, dropping off his cousin, Miguel Catalan, about 100 to 150 yards away from the murder scene at the time of the murder.
So the HBO tape, in your opinion, is good only for what?
Nothing.
One.
So the prosecution is going to contend that you could have left early and had time to go and commit that murder. And, dude, that just, like, brought me back down.
Aerial view of Dodger Stadium. Todd.
I said, you know, I got to figure out a way to place you at Dodger Stadium even longer.
One.
Did you buy something there? And I'm like, yes, I bought a lot of things. He goes, did you use a credit card? I'm like, no.
And then we started talking about cell phones.
Alma testifies.
Now, there's a call at 10:11 in the evening for 49 seconds, an inbound call. Whose phone number is that?
My friend Glenda Reyes.
And did you call Juan from her phone?
Yes, I did.
Alma.
I kept calling Juan and calling Juan, and I'm like, is the game over?
I said, we're walking out of the stadium right now. And that was maybe about 10:10, I want to say.
Do you recognize that number?
Yeah, it's my number, but I don't remember if he called me or called me.
You have to remember every little detail of your life. You always think it may not happen to you, but only in the movies, only on TV.
Footage of the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase, Todd.
Being involved as a commentator on the O.J. Simpson case when he was doing his slow speed chase, that the police were able to find out which cell towers were pinging off of a cell phone when the call was transmitted. That's how they found him.
Nextel employee, Tasha Boggs.
The very first phone call I got from Todd was after the subpoena was released. We basically released phone records, wiretaps for, you know, law enforcement agencies and different type of entities. And I just happened to get that case just by the luck of the draw, you know.
Courtroom.
What's the first number that you recognize?
Mine.
Just due to the nature of the case, Todd was very, very persistent. It was one of those situations where it had to go above and beyond because we had the ability to see what cell tower the actual phone calls are pinging off of. It's going to show exactly where a person is at a certain time period.
Aerial view of the stadium showing the nearby cell tower. Todd.
The cell tower Juan had used was right across the street from Dodger Stadium, and the radius for that particular one is a mile. So I knew Juan was at Dodger Stadium at least 10:12.
Courtroom.
Which cell tower was used to receive that call at 10:11 at night?
10-11 at night, the cell site was NCA 6.
Judge Leslie Dunn.
Rather than giving me a diagram of whose phone number was whose, I was listening to numbers, trying to record numbers and times, and I was really befuddled. All I knew about the case was the defendant was possibly looking at a death sentence if he were ultimately convicted.
One.
And that frightened me, like, beyond words.
Judge Dunn.
In a preliminary hearing, am I going to send this person onto a jury trial, or am I going to make the decision to dismiss it? I was always aware of the pressure of time.
One.
I would go into the court with Todd, sit down, 10, 15 minutes max, and, you know, they'd talk back and forth, and lawyer jargon and stuff. I didn't know what they were talking about. Okay, see you next date, and on it went like that.
Judge Dunn.
I agreed to save time that I would take the interrogation audio tape home with me. I knew that I could listen to it as many times as I wanted to, which I did.
Audio, interrogation.
You guys are making the biggest mistake in the world. This night, you made the biggest mistake of your life.
No. You guys are gonna remember this because you guys are trying to pin somebody that had nothing to do with this.
I listened to that tape over and over and over again. I made my children listen to it. And I kept asking them, as I was really asking myself, is this the voice of a guilty man?
Footage of Juan being escorted into the courtroom. Juan.
I was waiting for Todd to come in to brief me. I remember he told me that as soon as I walked in that door, not to look over to the audience side, which is on the left side. Martha's family was in the seats.
Judge Dunn.
I remember being anguished by this case. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I vacillated, trying to determine how I was going to rule. Martha Puebla was at stake for me.
Courtroom talk.
This man would be facing the death penalty if he hadn't, by the grace of God, gotten Dodger tickets from someone the day before and invited these people, got caught on video from that HBO show. You heard the tape of the interview with Detective Penner.
Beth.
It is clearly a one-witness ID case. However, the one witness in this case is extremely credible, has no motive to lie, and made a composite drawing with a composite artist that is strikingly similar to the defendant's appearance.
Judge Dunn.
I don't have any doubt that eyewitness attempted to be credible, but he observed this murder on a darkened residential street under obviously the most traumatic of circumstances.
Juan.
She started talking and talking and talking, and I didn't understand one word she said. Todd's sitting to my left, and he leans over, and then he says, "It's over." And I said, "What?" And then,
Juan appears lost in thought. Next, footage of Juan's family greeting him as he returns home from jail. His little daughter runs into his arms.
I want to give your daddy a hug, Mama.
He picks her up, hugging and kissing her.
Hi.
Alma comes over and kisses Juan. She hugs them both.
Everything's over, Mommy.
Next, Juan gives Todd a huge hug, lifting him up off the ground. Todd smiles broadly and pats Juan on the back. They shake hands.
You owe him your life.
Juan.
Todd gave me one last hug and just seemed like he just rode off into the sunset like a, as he should, and, you know, left me there with my family and got into the car, and they said, you know, they were all super excited and happy as I was, and They're like, okay, what do you want? We'll buy you whatever. And I was like, all I want, honestly, is a Coke. I didn't have, you have no soda, no nothing in there, dude. All I wanted was a Coke. That's all.
Interview with Detective Rodriguez.
Do you know what incriminating evidence is? All right. Were you asking Mr. Catalan questions to try to obtain an incriminating response?
Yes.
Words on screen. Juan Catalan received a $320,000 settlement in a lawsuit against the city of Los Angeles and its police force.
Did you try to trick Juan Catalan after he was arrested with a circle around his picture?
Interview with Detective Pinner.
Yes, sir.
That was dishonest, right?
Words on screen. Detective Martin Pinner was removed from working homicide cases, and his partner, Detective Juan Rodriguez, was transferred to an auto fraud detail. Both declined to be interviewed for this film. Press conference.
We're going to begin the press conference with the United States Attorney, Deborah Wong Yang.
The indictment alleges that several members of the gang murdered a 16-year-old girl who had witnessed the gang's wrongdoings and was cooperating with police.
Words on screen. The FBI discovered that four other men were responsible for Martha Puebla's murder. All of them took deals in federal court for life in prison without parole.
Maybe.
Larry David.
I don't know. Every few years, somebody will bring it up or something, and I'll tell the story. Maybe I'll tell it at a party, how I got a guy off from murder, you know. Impress a date with it. I don't know.
Juan smiles and holds up a photo. A close-up reveals that it is of himself as a boy, kneeling at home plate, wearing a Dodgers uniform. Scenes of fans watching a game in Dodgers Stadium. Alma.
The thing that keeps repeating in my head over and over and over and over is imagine he would have stayed home to watch that game. Who were they going to believe? His mom? Me? My daughter? Oh, my daddy was here? How? How do you prove? It's just crazy.
The sun shines brightly down on Dodger Stadium. Alma and Juan sit in the otherwise empty stands, looking serious and thoughtful. Sam.
It's a dangerous thing to do, to go around viewing life from the what-if perspective. What if we hadn't done the deal with Larry David? What if the camera crew hadn't gone to that aisle on the field level? What if his daughter had decided that she didn't want to go to the ball game? What if he hadn't made the phone call? What if? All of life is what if. The next couple of minutes is a what if.
The view zooms out from the stadium seats until Alma and Juan are just tiny specks. Credits. Directed by Jacob LaMendola. Produced by Jacob LaMendola, Mary Beth Minthorn, Milos S. Silber, and Todd Wiseman Jr. Executive producers, Jason Spingarn Koff, Lisa Nishimura, Kevin Iwashina, and Abby Lynn Kang Davis. Edited by Matt Casella, supervising story editor, Jeremy Seifer. Additional editing, Jacob LaMendola, associate producers, Adam Abada and Reed Adler. Original music, Jay Wadley. Curb Your Enthusiasm footage, courtesy of Home Box Office. Copyright 2017, LaMendola Docs, LLC, all rights reserved. Logo, preferred content. Logo, Hayden 5, New York, New York. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red, Netflix.